I'm a rationalist. I believe in logic. Liberal arts teachers were endlessly accommodating. They would indulge all my various questions. And I was just, it was kind of this incredible awakening in terms of just, you can go as deep as you want and no one is telling you to stop.
This is the Indianness Podcast, stories of success from leaders and change makers of Indian origin. I get asked all the time, why have people of Indian origin achieved success across so many different disciplines around the globe? I have no idea, but let's find out together. Because every story is unique. And today I have the enormous privilege of welcoming someone who has quietly shaped the way billions of people communicate. In every email you send, every document you write, and every Chrome tab you open. Our guest is Rahul Roy Chaudhary, former CEO of Grammarly, the $13 billion AI communication company, trusted by 40 million people. Before that, he was the architect of Google Chrome products, vision for a decade, and right now a co-founder building something entirely new. What drew me, however, to Rahul's story is not the impressive titles or the logos on his resume. It's the less told story, the mathematician who flirted with a PhD in AI before the world knew what AI was, the investment banker who walked away from Wall Street to chase a different kind of wealth, and someone who found himself back in Bangalore at Google, working on local language search, carrying India into the internet age, before ascending to lead some of the most trusted products on the planet. Rahul, welcome to the Indianness Podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. Great to be here, Sanjay.
Awesome. Rahul, as we mentioned to you before, this is a global audience. A lot of the global diaspora obviously listens in. We basically talk to the change makers. And the idea is really to take a look at what made them who they are. And for that, we really have to go back to the origins and their roots. So, Rahul, let's start by telling our listeners a little bit about you. Where were you born? And tell us a little bit about your parents, siblings, some of the conversations at the dinner table. I think that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, well, you're taking me back. But for your listeners, I would say I was born in Calcutta, and I grew up in Calcutta, India, in the 70s and 80s. I was born in 1972. And it was a very different time. And I may be older than many of your listeners, but for people who are not aware, India back then was a much more closed economy. It only started liberalizing in 1991. And so we grew up in a world in which there wasn't easy access to information. There wasn't a lot of consumer goods choices. I mean, it's funny, I tell my kids now that, you know, we had school uniforms and there was one kind of shoe. They were called Bata Naughty Boy shoes. That's what he wore to school. There was one kind of breakfast cereal, cornflakes. You either like it or you don't. And we never thought much of it because that's how the world was we grew up in. And it's just funny to see it's changed and transformed in so many ways. But that's the India I grew up in. But there were, you know, I'm painting it as a time of deprivation, but also there was also, a lot of very positive attributes. We would be playing on the streets every evening, playing sports. There was a big, strong sense of community. There was just a sense of, you know, there was less distraction with digital tools. And so you went outside, you had fun with your friends. And so every evening we would go play whatever the game of the choice of the day was. It was hockey or cricket or football. We'd go and just be out there, you know, doing some physical activity.
So, Rahul, it was Cal. You were obviously, out there, you know, a life that you knew of. Tell us a little bit about your parents. Give us a peek into the parent and the household a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I have parents and a younger brother, so we're a family of four, middle class family, grew up, not wealthy, but not, not poor. We're kind of a middle class family. Education was important and valued. We all read from a very young age. I would read voraciously. And it's funny, actually, back then, getting books wasn't that easy. There weren't that many books available. And so, you know, my friends and I would scour the secondhand bookstores on Gariahat Road. There were all these little stores where you could buy these secondhand books, and we'd go find these gems. And then there was once a year, there was a book fair. And it was a big deal that there was this book fair and there was tons of books available. And so we really cherished those moments, because it's interesting now when I think back, we were just hungry for information. I was insatiably curious. I was trying to just suck up as much knowledge and information as I could. And this was pre-internet. This was a closed economy. And so it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to come by. So when we found it, we really valued and cherished it.
So Rahul, obviously a lot of curiosity, a lot of books. And you said there were sports too. Were you inclined towards sports? What sports did you play?
Yeah, we played, you know, I see my kids now. And, you know, it's interesting. This may be a Bay Area special thing, but kids end up specializing very, very young. So you've kind of like by class six, you've kind of picked a sport and you're really focusing on getting really good at that sport. But when I was coming up, and it could be that that's happening in India too, you know, it may be that that's kind of just a global trend. But when I was coming up, you just played different sports. I mean, so there was hockey season, we played field hockey, there was cricket, we played cricket, football. We played rugby. That's a bit unusual, but the Calcutta has a tradition of rugby, and there were different rugby tournaments and rugby teams. And so our school in 10th grade, one of our alumni decided that he would coach a school rugby team. And I played it, and it was fantastic. It's a tough sport, but nothing gets you and whips you into shape like rugby. It's intense.
Yeah, it's a tough tough sport. Calcutta is a very for people who don't know, and again, I'm not a expert. I've been there a few times. Has a big tradition. It's food tradition. It's got the literary tradition, etc. Did that ever play any role in terms of as you were learning, the books that you were reading? Was there any specific area of books? Because you know where I'm going because of where you ended up trying to help folks like me who are still currently using your product and paying the, I don't know, it's $29.99 or something, but we'll come to that later.
Worth every penny.
Yeah, okay. So what was it there? What, you know, were there specific things that you were reading?
I wouldn't say so. I would say that, you know, I think maybe the inheritance and the kind of the peculiar Calcutta ethos back in those days, maybe were two things. I think one was just a general respect for literary endeavors. And so reading books, discussing books, just kind of following literary developments, they were not seen as strange or weird. It was a very normal thing to do. And so I indulged my love for reading and literature, fiction, nonfiction. And it was fine. It was an accepted part of the cultural milieu in some ways. And so that was nice. I think I benefited from that. And I would say the other inheritance maybe, is that there's a tradition of rationalism, I would say, of maybe less prone to, kind of extremes of beliefs in any kind of direction or predilections to just have kind of unfounded views on different things. And so this idea of like, can you ground your beliefs in some sort of a rational belief? And I think maybe I didn't know it at the time, but I think I did imbibe that. And I'm a lifelong, I believe in the scientific method. I'm a rationalist. I believe in logic and like, let's actually use evidence. And it's kind of helped me through life. And, you know, especially now, this world is kind of crazy in so many ways. There's people have a lot of passionate views on lots of different things on various sides of the spectrum. on so many different axes, not just one thing. And I feel like this idea of just going back to a rationalist view of how the world evolves and going back to evidence, I think is a very, to me, it's almost like a security blanket. It kind of helps you make sense of the world.
So, Rahul, in terms of as you finished schooling and you went towards college, any friends that you built there? Was there a network of friends?
Yeah, you know, I went to a school where a lot of people in my class, outgoing class, 12th grade, would end up going to the U.S. for college, undergrad. And so it was quite unusual. I think now it's more common. A lot of kids I see from India come to the U.S. to study undergrad. Back then, it was rare comparatively, but somehow my school, this was kind of a thing that happened. And so the year that I came to college in the U.S., a lot of my friends also came to college in the U.S. And, you know, so we kind of went through this experience together, first applying to college, taking the SATs, all the heartbreak and the joy of rejections and acceptances. And then we all ended up coming to the U.S., you know, not a penny to our name, trying to make our life in this new world. And for the most part, the group of people are incredibly accomplished. They've done incredible things. To this day, they remain some of my closest friends. I'm in touch with them. We meet up. In some cases, our kids and our friends. And so that's it's great. It's great that we kind of, you know, we've stayed in touch over all these years. Decades, I should say.
Wow. Rahul, you studied mathematics as an undergrad and as a class salutarian at Hamilton College, which is in upstate New York for our guests who are overseas. That's a small liberal arts school. It's an unconventional choice for an Indian student in the early 90s. Would you say that? How did that?
I would say that for sure, yes.
Yeah, I mean, generally, we call it the two-choice option for Indian kids, you know, doctor or an engineer. So, you know, and tell us about that choice. And then what did that environment of being in a small liberal arts school, you know, teach you or tell you, you know, just to give our listeners a little bit of that perspective?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. So first of all, I was on some other podcast and someone said, what was your big master plan? Like you had planned out your life. You went to Hamilton and that led to the next thing. And I was like, nothing could be further from the truth. It was quite random. So the way it happened was, I was in school in Calcutta, and the thing I was chafing, I was a good student by and large. I wasn't like brilliant, but I was decent. But the thing that I really kind of, the thing that I liked was I was interested in a lot of different things. I liked literature. I liked writing. I liked creative writing. I enjoyed math. I enjoyed science. I enjoyed history. So I liked a lot of different things. And I was kind of chafing at this idea that you have to pick a lane pretty early on. By class 10, you kind of have to decide. And back then it was really like, are you going to apply to IIT with the joint entrance exam or not? And if you are, that's going to be a singular focus. And somehow that never really appealed to me. I'm like, well, I mean, I like it, but I also like a lot of other things. And so it just seems odd that I would give up all the other things I like and somehow singularly have to focus on this one thing. So I was struggling with this. And then right around the same time, I met this person who actually was shockingly influential in my life. He probably doesn't know how influential he was in my life, but he was an employee at the U.S. Embassy in Calcutta. And I met him in some social gathering and we were just chatting and he kind of took an interest in my, you know, like, he's like, what are you interested in? And I was telling him and he kind of took an interest in, you know, my kind of my journey. And he told me about liberal arts education. I never knew what it was. And it really appealed to me, this idea that you could study pretty broadly and you could build a kind of this broad base of knowledge and you can learn critical thinking skills. I think that's really the essence of liberal arts, is critical thinking. And then you can apply it in different contexts. And so that was like, great, liberal arts sounds wonderful. Let's apply to some liberal arts colleges. And I applied to Hamilton because this guy was an admissions officer at Hamilton many years prior and told me about the school. And so I applied there. I got in and ended up going there, not knowing how cold upstate New York can be, not knowing what it meant to be in a small town in upstate New York. I'd never been to the US at that point. So I had no idea what I was getting into. And so I went sight unseen. It's kind of crazy, actually, when I think back. But it was an amazing experience. I would say, you know, I think just this idea that I could take classes in a wide variety of disciplines, learn a ton of things was just like incredible. I was taking classes in philosophy, anthropology, math, history. I was just feasting. It was like I was just feasting on this stuff. It was incredible. I was just like my intellectual awakening. And then when I had questions, you know, typically in school, there was a big class in Calcutta growing up in high school. You know, teachers were good, but they wouldn't indulge a lot of curiosity. They'd be like, listen, okay, we got, like, let's get it done. We got to get the exam and study for the exam. And so liberal arts teachers were endlessly accommodating. They would indulge all my various questions. And I was just, it was kind of this incredible awakening in terms of just, you can go as deep as you want and no one is telling you to stop. They actually like it. And so that was amazing. And so that kind of drew me to a wide variety of things, but I really liked math and I ended up gravitating towards a branch of mathematics around automated theorem proving, which is kind of an early version of AI. It's the idea that you have a theorem, how can you automatically prove that the theorem is true or false? And so that's kind of like my journey.